Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
How are we this fine sunny day?
We are very well. We have a lovely special guest with us today.
We do, because it's spring break.
Yes.
And so we have a guest. Sachi Kuchker is here with us today. Hello, Sachi.
Hello.
Sachi's experience on radio is limited to one other time, and so we're learning as we go.
That's right. And it's a March break experience.
It is. Yes. And what we're talking about over spring break is what most of us wish we could do during spring break, and that is to sit around and read all day and drink coffee and stuff like that. So yeah, so we're going to talk about reading,
possibly on a beach.
Oh, that would be nice.
Or by a swimming pool.
Yeah,
but failing that,
in our living room,
exactly,
with a sunny window nearby.
Very. Oh yeah, we got some of that, so it's all good. That's right.
Okay, so Louise, being the great and wonderful publisher.
Oh wow, wouldn't know about that.
Well, I think it's important to recognize that we have a local publisher.
That's true, we do.
And it is an amazing gift, because you work with people who might otherwise never be able to publish their ideas, their stories, their memoirs, unless there was somebody here to guide them along.
That's right. And I mean, it's not so much me, per se. It's just the way publishing is going. You know, 25, I mean, we've talked about this before, 50 years ago, you couldn't publish. Today, you can.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the democratization of publishing. Before, it used to be a rich white man, you know, New York City elite type of business, but now it belongs to everyone. So not everyone's making money, but but you're definitely...
We didn't say anything about making
exactly,
money.
But the internet and... crowdsourcing, fan fiction, blogging, even Facebook and Twitter, which are considered short message blogs, you know, are giving opportunities to people to share their voice in a way that 25 or 50 years ago was simply impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating topic.
It's a very powerful opportunity, too.
Yeah.
So it's so nice to have young people here who are so deeply interested in the written word, and who ultimately will be their future. So we need to hear from them more often.
Okay, well, this is our chance. Sachi, why don't you start? Let's start by talking about what you're doing over spring break. What are you going to be reading over the break? Tell us about what you got on the go.
What I'm reading right now is a series called... I'm not sure what the name of the actual series is, but the one I'm reading right now is called Dead is the New Black. It's a book one of my friends recommended for me. I didn't choose it myself. I was just told that I should read it because it was a good series.
Does this happen a lot, where you guys just share books and say, here, read this?
Yeah. I've a little bit of a couple friends that we just show each other books that, like, this is an amazing series. You should read it.
Oh.
And it's interesting you say series. Does it have to be part of a series? Is that more interesting to you?
I prefer that, because that way there's always something new to look forward to. And often single books seem to end too quickly.
Yeah. I feel like that too. I feel sad at the end of a book.
Oh, yeah. Especially, like, at the end of 6-7 part series.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
sad. At the end of Harry Potter. That was very sad.
Well, see, I've never read Harry Potter.
You didn't?
No.
Well, then we won't talk about it, because I wouldn't want to spoil anything.
No, that's okay. And I mean, the reason I haven't read it, because it didn't connect to me on a personal level. It wasn't a narrative that I was particularly interested. My kids have read it.
Yeah.
Or one of my kids has read it.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting, because as Sachi and I were reading, well, we read this guy's blog who writes young adult fiction, and he was saying how the young adult fiction, you know, there's masterpieces hidden at the back of the bookstore under this heading, young adult, and that there's it. What was his quote?
It is not a genre. No.
Yeah, no, not that one. Okay. The he said something like, saying that you don't read young adult fiction because you're not a young adult is like saying you don't watch crime drama because you're not a policeman.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't have to be the thing to do the thing that something was aimed at. And the young adult age group was an underserved population in terms of literature. And so that's why there's been kind of a boom. Right?
Well, it's young adult fiction if young adults read it.
Yeah. And he said...
Or is it young adult fiction because it's about young adults?
Well, that's an interesting topic.
Tell us, young adult. What say you?
Well, I say young adult fiction is basically classified by being read by young adults, because you can write something for the point of view of a young adult, but that does not mean that it's entirely interesting to our age group. We're a very picky age group.
Mm-hmm. Interesting that you're very picky.
This does not surprise me.
We don't like... We're not fond of long, droning text. We like fast-paced. Write one thing after another.
Like sound-bitey kind of delivery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Action.
It could, and it could be... Action. That could be shaped by the media world you live in.
Well, it probably too, is. Right?
Yeah.
Because the way you consume content is a lot different from the way... say we consume content, and far different from the way our parents consumed content. I think it's interesting how we're having to deliver ideas in more productive and efficient ways, whether it's like snappy dialogue or, right?
Well, and that's what
e-books or, you know.
Yeah. And that's what I find about young adult is that it's a lot of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's entirely dialogue. And in some cases, like there's a fellow too that was writing about it that, a good young adult fiction is like a slick screenplay.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
So well, because it's the narrative, it's the quality of the narrative.
Yeah.
And here, and I mean, maybe there's some authenticity. I think it seems to me young adults, because it's about peer-to-peer relationships, would rather ingest information from their peers on a conversational level than having to, say, read a sweeping passage from, you know, Forster in, I can't even remember his, India. I can't remember. I'll look it up. Right? Yeah. The stuff that we had to read in university, right? Yeah.
That's right.
And there were sweeping passages.
Yeah.
Like the way that the mist hits the lake in the morning and the sun and all that stuff. You know, you're not interested in that stuff.
No, no. Not really.
No. You want to hear the guy say, hey, what do you think about the... the sunset, you know, or hear them talk about the sunset rather than read someone a passage to India. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking that, but I thought, no, it can't be that simple.
So you'd rather hear, experience a dialogue rather than read someone else's view of what's happening? Would that be a fair assessment?
Most of this age group, yes.
Yeah.
I'm more diverse with that, I guess. Mm-hmm. I like dialogue. I don't mind pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm. So you find
as long as it's described.
Yes.
Right. But do you find it easier to absorb the information if it's in the form of two people talking about it, describing it to each other? Is that kind of an easier way of communicating?
It is, rather, because that's how our generation kind of grew up, is we talk.
We chat. We text.
Yeah,
right.
All the different ways of communicating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not just about reading anymore. I mean, reading books anymore. It's all forms of, holy, actually, if you can get your mind around it, it's been an explosion in one generation about the different ways you can communicate.
Right.
Yeah.
I had one of my favorite young people stayed at my house for a few weeks, and every day she would say, so I was talking to my friend, and I'd say, what friend were you talking to? Because she's quiet as a mouse. Did you phone her? Did someone come over? Who are you talking to? I haven't heard you make a sound. She says, no, I was texting her.
Oh, that's still
talking.
But
she calls it talking.
Yeah.
And it was such a lesson for me there that talking doesn't actually mean, you know, there's voice involved, right? It can just be texting.
Yeah.
You know?
Amazing.
And in a way, that's what, to me, YA fiction is the texting version of what we call talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't necessarily need to be full of detail, right? Or...
Yeah, so how... But, okay, I'm just going to ask this.
It's kind
then.
Of a mind-blowing concept.
Yeah, so what holds your interest then if it's mostly just fast-paced dialogue and not actually as much, you know, inner discovery or, you know, action in terms of what, you know, what else is happening in the situation? Like, what holds your interest? What keeps the story moving forward?
It's not all dialogue, though. There's actually action. Like, most of the books I read kind of alternate between speaking and discussing, and then there's action. That's more described.
And is it fast-paced, or...?
Most of the time, yes. Hmm. There's some books that are more slower, mostly near the beginning.
Can you think of a book that you have read in the last little while that's kind of indicative of either something that's fast-paced or something that's slower-paced and has more descriptive things? Like any of your...
Is it like a car chase in a movie? Like there has to be that element of excitement? That's grown-ups trying to
answer first.
Figure you out. Yeah.
Sorry, we're kind of bombarding.
Oh, no. Back to the question. A book that you've read recently that would be described as fast-paced.
The book I'm reading right now, it definitely started right off the bat, just action. It didn't really ease you into it. It kind of, it's within like the first chapter.
Yeah.
Like, within the first chapter, someone was murdered, and it's...
Yeah.
You're right in the book already. Because books that tend to have a slower start don't really, like, hold our attention. Because, you know, we're used to having things, like, within seconds.
That's right.
Instant gratification. Sounds like,
yes. Yeah.
Interesting. But has there been anything that you've read recently that has had that slower sort of narrative that has eased you into a story that you actually enjoyed? Or is it something you put down after 10 pages and went, yeah, no?
No, I don't really notice these things because I read quickly. But I know that my sister has said several times that she doesn't like this one series, Mortal Instruments, because they have quite a slow beginning in the first book.
Mm.
I thought it wasn't very slow. I mean, first couple pages, again, there's this total mysterious thing that's happening, but...
So the authors need to go out and grab you and pull you in right away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a hook in your
speeches. Yeah, you need a hook. Huh.
And whereas then...
Maybe we don't need a hook. Well, we need a hook.
I kind of feel like I'm trying to think of books that I've read that it's taken me a long time to get into. And I think, you know, in a way, there is always something right off the bat that'll keep you reading in. Hmm. Even if there's lots of narrative after.
Mm-hmm.
There's some weird thing, some mysterious thing pretty quick so that you're like, oh. And you just want to keep reading because you're trying to figure that thing out or learning more about that character. So I guess, you know, I guess we're the same. We need the hook. Don't you think?
Yes.
Well, and I guess if I think of myself at your age, I think my reading was dictated by what I was taking in school. So those choices were always sort of informed by mature grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember feeling like, oh yeah, well, there's those books, but then there's the books that my friends read. That's the case.
Yeah,
now.
Exactly, right? Because there wasn't really young adult when we were growing up.
My reading experiences were curated by a teacher.
Right.
Whereas it sounds to me like Sachi's reading experiences are not curated by a teacher. They're curated by your peer group.
Yeah.
Right?
The one book I've ever read in class was like a autobiography, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was written by the person that it was about.
Yeah.
That's autobiography.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
And that was the only one that was actually directed by a teacher that you read.
That we were supposed to read in class. Of course, I probably would be reading stuff in English, but...
Wait, what? You've only been asked to read one book in school?
Yes.
In grade 9?
That wasn't even an English class. Haven't been asked to read anything yet in English. Just, you know, short stories.
Wow.
Not actually a full-length novel.
What's happening there? I just think it's so interesting because I can still remember the 5 books I had to read in grade 9.
Yeah.
Right?
And
Merchant of Venice.
Yeah.
Black Like Me. To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
Catcher in the Rye. Right?
Right.
And
yeah.
I don't know. Is that not happening anymore?
I don't think it's happening. Well, you see, we had an unusual situation. Sachi got English 9 left off her schedule.
Oh, okay.
And nobody really noticed it until this second semester when we went in and said, why doesn't our child take English?
Mm-hmm.
And they went, oops. Counselors. Yeah. And so she's taking it online now.
Oh, okay.
But even so,
is it like, there's no grammar.
It's just short stories.
Oh, okay.
That she just reads online. There's no novel assignments.
Oh no, I think there's one at the end of the year where individual assignment, like you choose a novel to read,
mm-hmm.
but you don't actually get assigned a single novel. Like you're not supposed to read this novel or this novel.
You get to pick one.
Yeah.
And so you're reading a great deal outside of the traditional curriculum,
right?
Which is, I would say, population-wide, relatively unusual.
Yeah.
Although,
well, because of
not terribly rare, but
yeah.
And I wish there were more of it. So I admire that.
Yeah.
And then tell us about how your peer group picks these titles. Is it because of the narrative is about teenagers? I mean, The Hobbit could be considered a YA.
Yeah.
A young adult, right?
It's a very good book, and it's quite interesting, so.
Tell us, have you read The Hobbit?
Well, I've started it.
Mm-hmm.
I had it read to me when I was really young, but I barely remember any of it, so.
Yeah, actually, Sachi's dad read it to them when they were really little, like every night for I don't even know how many months. So they've had it read to them. And you remember the story from that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but reading that and the whole Tolkien series on your own hasn't actually quite happened yet.
Well, I'm reading Lord of the Rings first before I start The Hobbit.
Oh, okay.
I'm about partway through the Two Towers right now.
Mm. Cool.
My mind is blown. Wow.
I've got one of those big... all three books in one books that are all
it's
nice.
Hard to hold
that's
up. It's so big.
Yeah. And I don't give, I mean, you know, of course young people read. I read, you read. I just don't remember it. It was always a function of what was happening at school. It wasn't necessarily a function of what was happening in my social life and my peer group. So that is encouraging, very encouraging. But again, it's YA because... And that's kind of the crux of the question we were trying to cover in the first segment. Because it's read by young people or because it's about young people? Or that's, some combination?
That's a very good question, and I don't even know the answer.
Okay. No, that's fair. Yeah. Nobody knows the answer.
And how do we even know why we're attracted to certain things, right? And certain kids are just readers, right? They just eat it up, and that's just kind of... who you are, and that's who Sachi is. It's been great. But I think that when you're, because I remember you were telling me once how when you're at the library and the young adult fiction section now is enormous, right? Mm-hmm. And that,
there's a separate room for the library, which is
great.
Nice.
Comfy chairs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But you were saying how sometimes you just pull things off because of how the cover looks.
Well, I find cool looking covers. Often I prefer plain black or dark blue.
Almost everything you have here is black.
Yeah.
You should, for the pink one.
The pink one was all pink. My friend recommended.
Yeah. But you should see when we went down to Penticton for an overnighter, and there's an awesome bookstore in Penticton.
That's good to hear, because we're have going you, there, aren't we?
Yes. It's called The Bookshop downtown, and when you walk in, it just smells like a bookstore, right?
It smells like books, and it's wonderful.
It's so awesome, but it's so funny. I actually took a picture of the teen lit area.
Yes.
And it's right next to the chick lit area.
Oh.
So I took a picture because the teen lit is almost all black covers.
Wow.
And then right next to the chick lit is all pastels.
Oh.
It's so funny. It's like a color barrier.
Like color blocking. Well, sure. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of thought goes into designing the cover.
Yeah. Well, the covers, I prefer like plain covers like this one I have. It's a sword hilt. On plain black, and it's elegant looking. Mm-hmm.
Elegant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It looks plain, and I prefer that to be like not super detailed covers, because the plain covers tend to, they seem more like attracting. Like they tend to just, I don't know.
Well, they cut through the clutter.
Yeah.
There's a lot of clutter.
Maybe that's it. Yeah, when there's clutter on the book, it feels like it'll be a cluttery story.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a signal.
Or superficial on some level. You're looking for something deep and meaningful.
Something that looks, it looks like it's going to have meaning.
Yeah, and that black really does do that.
Yeah.
I'm serious, and I mean it. Right?
And there's a whole genre, and this is where that whole genre can...
Yes.
Young adult... is not a genre.
No.
It's a demographic.
I don't think so. I think it is a demographic. It's a readership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an age range that it is directed at, but it is not itself a genre. There's lots of genres within young adult fiction, and one of those is vampire dramas. Mm-hmm.
And zombies and mysteries.
Yeah. Well, and I think the Twilight series was, I mean, as much as people like to kind of make fun of it now, that was instrumental in sort of launching young adults fiction stories into the mainstream, right?
And then tons of adults read Twilight.
Yeah, and it was
and watched
because
the
Harry
movie
Potter
and,
was also that, but it was Potter was kind of more all over, but Twilight was almost like a secret pleasure, right?
Like and more teen based.
Yes,
to me, Harry Potter was a form of children's fiction.
Yeah, right? Which included...
Because he was so little when it started.
Yeah, and it's so many adults in the story. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Twilight, it was pretty much all teens.
All teens.
Yeah, except, of course, the 150-year-old vampires. And they're not really
teenagers. Teen-looking.
Yeah, teen-looking.
They look like teenagers, yeah. Supposedly.
Yeah, and then the, you know, there's the zombie thing and the...
But that launching of the supernatural thing mm-hmm. was enormous. And now, like, the vampire stuff is just everywhere. Like, there were a lot of trend, I don't want to say copycat, but, you know, like, people just went off with that whole trend and went crazy.
In the Penticton bookstore, there was a whole section labeled vampire novels, literally just vampire fiction.
Wow.
Like, an entire bookshelf. And they're pretty tall bookshelves, too.
Yeah, like, I bet you that was
10 feet up. Least.
Yeah. Would you have read about vampires?
I don't remember reading about vampires. I mean, except in Stephen King. I read a lot of Stephen King when I was a teenager, so maybe there was a vampire in there or two, but mostly not, right? I think I read Frankenstein. I had to read Frankenstein in grade 12.
Okay.
I didn't have to read Dracula.
No.
I don't think I had a vampire in my youth, no.
No, I had a vampire-free reading youth. I did.
Yeah. Frankenstein scared the crap out of me.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, my gosh. It is such a scary book. Have you read it?
In fact, I had a horror-free reading.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, there's some horrific things in Shakespeare, but...
Yeah.
But not... There were no vampires.
I mean, vampires in Shakespeare. I'd love to see a mashup between Shakespeare and Twilight.
Well, I'm sure that's coming.
Okay. You can find crossovers of anything mm-hmm. in fan fiction, trust me.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about fan fiction then.
It's the fan fiction that represents sort of like, you know, there's fusion cooking, but there's fusion fiction.
Fusion fiction.
And I think that's what the young readers are bringing, are saying, hey, wouldn't it be cool if this guy met this guy? It's like a giant house party where everybody gets to meet, right? Which is what teenagers are really good at.
Yeah.
Meeting and sharing and...
That's right. Well, I know that because the way I look at it is, have you ever finished a book and thought, oh, man, wouldn't that be nice if that character went on to do this or if those two got together or if this happened?
Exactly. Yeah.
And people are making it happen.
That is the point of fan fiction. Even though there's a lot of very bad authors, there's some good ones that have amazing ideas. And if you can pick them out, there's actually some quite enjoyable stories.
Well, it's a skill, I guess, right?
You're not born.
You might be born a storyteller, but... There's always room for improvement in terms of...
Yes.
Right. So do you think it's easier? Like if you're an avid reader and you are a beginner writer, do you think that fan fiction is a great way to enter that sort of field?
I love it because I can practice writing without having to every time pull new characters and a new story, a new plot and new creatures and everything. I can just sort of write with characters and emotions and I don't have to develop... their personality. I can just take their personality and write them into a new story.
So you're sort of upcycling.
Yeah.
And exploring.
I like that. Mm-hmm. And also, I guess...
Because you're unique in that way. Not only are you an avid reader, you're also a writer.
Mm-hmm.
So...
But there's lots of them.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Lots of
people writing.
Writing fan fiction.
Yeah. So it's pulling... Like, I think there's pulling more creative writing skills out of the general public by having these fan fiction websites that you can publish your stories on.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all imagine it, but we hardly ever sit down and say, okay, you know what? I'm going to try to get better at this.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually develop my skills and write. And people are doing it.
I know. And so the one thing that concerns me a little bit, it feels like there's two tracks. There's like your life, your journey that you're on as a young person, and then there's what's happening at school. And when do those intersect very much?
Not really.
Yeah, see, that is a...
That's interesting.
It's such a shame, though, because to me, if I were teaching, and I don't mean to slam English teachers, they're lovely and also have shaped my life, but if I were teaching, what grade are you in? Grade 9?
Yeah.
English. Right?
Or she's grade in 9 French.
Lit.
She's... Oh, I see, yeah.
Right. Or if grade 9 English lit, because you have to learn English lit in English. And that was my first English course, really, was grade 9 English lit. Everything else prior to that I'd done in French.
Oh, right.
So it was like open this door in this great universe.
Yeah.
But they were curating, they were taking me through, right? This idea of fan fiction and... creative writing and, you know, because my son's in grade 7 and it's like pulling teeth to ask him to write a story.
But I bet you, but maybe it would be easier if he did fan fiction because he takes his favorite characters and does something totally different with them, or has characters from different books meet.
Yes.
Or even from graphic novels or.
No, but the lovely thing about fan fiction is it's not just books. It's books, TV shows, movies, graphic novels.
Everything. So you can get like Doctor Who meets.
Meets anyone. Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
And you can write such wonderful crossovers because there's always, always, always characters that you say, I wish they could meet so-and-so from such-and-such.
It's so interesting. Like you said about the mashup, that's what teenagers are good at, is figuring out how to mix things up.
Yeah.
Make like it
the
different.
Jocks with the... Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. With the hipsters with the... Yeah, it's great. And yet, really, if you think about what teen... Like, in my house, you know, they like video games and they love Minecraft. But really, Minecraft and video games are... It's a narrative. Mm-hmm. Right? So, if you wanted my sons to write something...
There is Minecraft fan fiction.
You should write Minecraft fan fiction.
There is. There's Minecraft.
They could do that. Video game fan fiction.
Well, what does that look like?
It's really weird. I've never actually read any, but I've seen summaries for them, and they seem kind of weird.
And have you played Minecraft?
Yes.
Oh,
have
gosh.
You played yes? Okay, I didn't know.
I've not played Minecraft, but that one plays Minecraft.
And you're really building your own universe.
Well, you are.
And drawing from your experience.
But is there characters in Minecraft?
Well, there's
zombies,
Steve,
too.
Right? I'm using his quotations, which is the main character you start with.
But Steve.
It's a very generic name. And there's also Alex, which is the girl version of the main character you start with.
Okay. And that's it?
And then you build the whole universe.
And so how do you make fan fiction with Steve and a bunch of zombies?
Well, Steve and a bunch of zombies build an amusement park in the middle of nowhere, and then, then another
stuff happens,
band comes and attacks and tries to steal their food. And it's really cool. I mean, I don't mind if they play Minecraft.
Minecraft's actually fun. Yeah. Especially...
But I've never made the connection between fan fiction, young adult, Minecraft gaming, right? It's all...
Yeah.
It's all about the possibility, inventing your own world and bringing all the people you want. Come with me, Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah. There's an entire category. Like, if you go through fan fiction, there's books, movies, TV shows, and then there's gaming.
Oh.
There's hundreds of gaming fan fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Like, about gaming, like Halo, Call of Duty, like, all these things have... fan fiction written from like a whole new character but in this universe.
Oh, in the universe. See, now that's starting to become clear to me now. You're writing, you can actually develop other characters and the characters that have already been invented and just have a story happening in that universe.
Yeah.
That sort of makes sense.
Wow.
Now I'd like to talk a little bit about publishing
because
that is also something that has changed a great deal in your industry over just the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, our industry. I mean, we're all publishers in a way.
Yeah.
Because we're all sharing stories. It's just that some of us try to do it in commercially viable ways, and some of us have success, and, you know.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of online, self-published, zero revenue, just for the sake of the love of it.
So now that's interesting, because that couldn't really happen before.
No.
Because unless you're just writing, like literally writing your own memoirs for your family to be passed down, that's great. Mm-hmm. But you basically got one copy. Maybe you can make a few photocopies.
Exactly.
But in terms of getting it out there and sharing it.
No, that whole social network piece is so important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that has, and that's been like 10 years that's been going on. It's hardly a drop in the bucket in time.
Yeah, I would say it would be safe. I think it would be safe to assume that 90% of people who write make no money doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it for the love and don't expect to actually make their living.
No.
Which is kind of interesting because I'm one of those people that I don't like it when people just think they can pick up a pen and become a writer, like capital W, or pick up a paintbrush and become an artist, capital A, because I figure those things are professions.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be trained and you have to work at it. You have to practice and you have to pay your dues before you get to be the capital whatever of anything, right? Just like Margaret Atwood. Do you remember Margaret Atwood's beautiful quote? That guy that came to one of her book signings, he was a heart surgeon and he said to her, "You know, I really admire you. In fact, when I retire, I'm going to become a writer." And she said, "Well, what a coincidence. When I retire, I'm going to become a heart surgeon." So there was this assumption, that you can just pick up one of the arts and be that thing.
I know, but it's like any any profession, you can be a, I mean, nobody's an amateur accountant or an amateur heart surgeon, but you can be an amateur artist. You can be an amateur
musician. I can be an amateur accountant.
You can be an amateur. You could be an amateur accountant. I know, but it's not.
I know.
Yeah. Right.
But you're right.
You can be an amateur potter, an amateur sculptor.
Right.
Right. I'm an amateur at most things that I, yeah. I do. Right. And so I guess it's, where the line gets blurry for me is how do you become a professional writer mm-hmm. in this day and age?
That's true because right? that you're right about the blurred line there.
So that
you can be published now.
That business model is vastly different.
Yeah, because you could be published now without having a quality product. Mm-hmm. That's the big
or you
thing.
Can have a quality product that nobody wants to publish.
Yeah, well, like your famous quote: "Whenever you think you're having a bad day."
Oh yes. Actually, I found this online, like everything else. Someone had posted online saying, if you ever feel bad about yourself, just remember, you're not one of the 12 publishers who turned down Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's true. And that narrative is, you know, consistent in the publishing business. They were, you know, took Julia Child 8 years to publish her first book.
Yeah.
And she got turned down a couple of times.
Yeah.
So it is about determination. And it's also about... I think this generation is redefining, at least for me, what endorsement they need in order to get where they want to be.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So whereas we would have needed a university degree, a this, a that, the other thing, I think this generation is saying, I did it. I figured it out on YouTube.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right. I watched a video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's, again, it's the democratization of knowledge
and skills
and information. And I mean, suddenly I want to be 15 again, right?
Interesting.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That would be fan fiction.
Yeah. And actually that's one of the things about, young adult fiction is to stay true to the demographic, you have to drop all of your adultness mm-hmm. and go back to your teens and think about, instead of being the mom writing about teens and saying, you know, all of those falsehoods about, well, you know, if you do this, this will happen, and don't stand too close to a boy, you'll get pregnant. You know, you have to go, don't stand downwind. And you have to drop all of that and go back to where there was real teen problems. And in fact, sex and drugs and alcohol were all part of our lives. Yeah, not every
murder and zombies. And
yeah. But even though not too. Every teen is dealing with death and murder and sex and all that stuff, it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's in mm-hmm. their universe. Mm-hmm. And so you have to deal with it when writing about them because that's their world.
And so these books that you brought in today, are they written by adults or teens? Are there many teen fiction writers?
They're really...
Well, no, not really. Although, I've read, I think, one book by someone young. I mean, last year in English, we read The Outsiders. And that is one book published by a girl named Essie Hinton, or Susie Hinton, who I think was 16 at the time of publishing.
When really? She wrote it?
I'm pretty sure.
Do you remember 16? The Outsiders?
I remember The Outsiders, yeah. Well, I remember the movie.
Oh, okay.
You never read the book?
No. Remember, I went to French school, so a lot of good this point. Is outside of my inside track. I've never heard of The Hobbit till I was in university, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I had either, really. Mm. I mean, very small town, northern Alberta. Anyway.
Good point.
Yeah. So you were just saying that you hadn't really had been told to read any books in English, but in grade 8, you were given The Outsiders, right?
We were given two books, actually, to read. I can't remember the name of the first one. Oh. Something about a pearl.
Oh, John Steinbeck.
Yes, the Pearl. Yeah. The Pearl. Or
The Pearl?
Yes, The Pearl. That's fancy. The and Pearl. The Outsiders.
Yeah.
Oh.
We might have had another one, but I honestly can't remember.
But that goes back, like, that's like 50, those are 50-year-old titles.
Well, but, I mean, there's a balance.
I mean, I know 60-year-olds who read The Outsiders when they were in grade 9.
Yeah, yeah, like, I did. I know, isn't there anything new that they can read? New classics? Isn't there any good books being written now? Where...
So, see, there's that huge opportunity there to merge those two.
Yeah.
It's like Layla's teacher, The Ranger's Apprentice.
Right. Jake Jacobson, grade 5 teacher at Bastion.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know Yes, Mr. Jacobson.
Yeah.
He's so
Mr. J.
awesome.
Is he
Mr.
So awesome?
J. He was so, well, of course, I homeschooled my kids until grade 4 or 5. So when Layla went in, she went into Mr. J's class. Mm-hmm. And there couldn't have been a better teacher for her.
Oh, that's great.
He was so wonderful and gentle. And he introduced the kids to The Ranger's Apprentice and started reading it in class. And it was it's a series of 19 novels.
Wow.
And we as a whole family got addicted to that series. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so fantastic. And we got the audiobooks and we'd listen to them on trips. And they were just wonderful.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
There's only 12.
Yeah. This is in no way a condemnation of the education system or any of the teachers. It's more of a, wow, I wonder what my English lit class would have been like.
Yeah.
Had this been the way, right?
Yeah.
So there's that opportunity for crossover there, I think, is very interesting.
And but okay, so if we can go back to the publishing part. Mm-hmm. So not all publishing opportunities online are about fan fiction. Sachi, what was the one that you were saying that people are publishing original stories on?
Well, there's two sites that you can publish original stories on, fictionpress.com or .net or something like that, and Wattpad.
Wattpad.
Yes.
Like that's WATTPAD.
Yes.
And so what kind of stories are happening on there?
All kinds of things.
Like, and these are young people, right? Well, it could be anybody.
It's anybody. It's all genre and all age ranges.
Yeah.
I'm going to use fan fiction as an example. I'll talk to people occasionally over private messaging when I'm, like, people review, particularly even insightful review. I'll message them back saying thank you and answering questions. And I've met someone who's graduated university, someone who's only a few years older than me, people who have kids and a husband have grown up.
Yeah.
There's probably a lot of guys in this website.
Yeah.
There's a lot of girls.
So stranger danger, but...
Yeah. But that's a whole other thing, too. Like, what I'm finding interesting about you and your sister publishing online, you guys have betas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does that work?
Well, they're basically another fanfiction user that basically, they edit your story. Mm-hmm. You send it to them, and they'll edit your story.
And so how did you find them?
There's an option on fanfiction where you can go through betas. It's a frustrating process.
Yes.
Very frustrating. It's better to put in your story that you need a beta, and then someone will ask in the reviews, like, well, I could be your beta, and that's easier. Because they don't tell you, because each beta will only do certain stories, TV shows, movies, books, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
So you have to go through them, pick through them, find people whose strengths are your weaknesses.
Oh.
So it's like an editorial review board. Or...
Right. But this person has to be, they want to be interested in your story in order to connect with you. And
so it's peer review, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is all a free exchange of ideas too, right? Yeah. Nobody gets paid. There's no advertising. There's no, like, it just kind of happens as a community.
Exactly.
And the copyright 100%. Stays with you.
Well, actually, these are not copyrighted because most of the ideas belong to someone else. So only, you know.
Man.
Is that why? You don't own anything, so.
Is that why it can be kind of freely distributed on these sites?
Yes, the fantastic thing is you don't own it.
Nobody owns.
Although they do have rules in place to stop from people, like, plagiarizing other people's stories and, like, copying them, pasting them on other sites, but. Other than that, they're free and distributed, and anyone can read them, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. Aww, it's such a very spirited, and that's the sharing economy, too, the millennials.
It is.
Millennials.
Yeah.
That's what it's all. Wow. My mind is totally blown.
Well, that's great. And so how does this affect publishing, paper publishing?
Well, it affects it deeply, because it's, it's hard to do traditional publishing in a commercially viable way. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's not meaningful or exciting or challenging. It just means it's hard to make a living doing it. I guess I would say YA is a big area, but as a segment, as a demographic segment, they're harder to reach than, say, right? So, you know, I'm sure Sachi goes to the bookstores all the time. But does she have a credit card? Does she have an Amazon account? Is she going to Walmart? Is she going to Costco? Right? So the way that traditional book publishers try and the distribution chain doesn't necessarily connect with this demographic as well as they might like it to. So that's why things like Twilight and a movie and, right? So it becomes about reapplying the content in ways that attract the audience, you know, whether it's a t-shirt or a poster, or a, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right, because, you know, to be honest, I have told her all the time, I'm sorry, no, I'm not going to lend you $30 for a book when you can get it at the library. Mm-hmm. So I feel bad sometimes saying that, but of course then she will choose when she has her own money, she will choose to buy it because owning a whole series is valuable to, I mean to you, isn't it? And why do you like to own the book itself? And even though you've read it already, sometimes you've even bought a book that you've read already from the library.
Because I find books that are just so good and I want to reread them. And I love when I have a whole day that I'm doing nothing to sit with a big cup of tea or pot of tea, because not enough tea to last for a whole day.
Not enough tea.
No, we're running out of tea again, just FYI.
Okay.
And I like to sit with an entire series and just read through it. And it's fun.
Well, you're consuming it. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you get something else out of it the second and third time around?
Yes. You pick up things you missed before and you start to make connections. You realize like, oh, they mentioned this guy because he shows up in that book like three books later. Mm. And so they realize like, oh, so that was important. Whereas it was just a detail that got shoved to the back of your mind when you first read over it.
Yeah. So interesting.
Yeah.
Have you ever?
It is interesting. We're just about a minute out here.
Okay.
I just want to say, I dream of the world where teenagers run their own publishing company.
Oh, wow.
And maybe that's where Play for Publishing has to go, to empower these young people to just go for it.
Yeah.
Because I am seriously on the outside track now. I'm painfully aware of this right at this moment.
But. So interesting. Mm-hmm.
And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Well, we're going to take a dramatic turn away from writing and publishing and reading and fiction and young adults for the dramatic moment.
Yeah, this would make a great teen novel.
Maybe it would.
It would. So I just saw this on NPR this morning about an art heist that happened 25 years ago. And the frames are still there.
The frame?
Empty frames.
Wow. Like, haunting
the gallery,
theft.
Yeah, of the Boston Gardner Museum. So it was one of the largest art heists in U.S. history, I guess. It's a world-class art collection, but now it's best known for the art that isn't there.
Oh!
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So the robbery included the loss of three Rembrandts. Oh, my gosh. A Vermeer, a Manet, and sketches by Degas.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's haunted Boston law enforcement and the art world ever since. So there's a campaign online to say that, so Boston's strong, I guess, so Boston's a very sporty city and has been through trauma. And so everybody's talking about this Boston strong. So this gallery is coming out and saying, we are not a city of champions until we solve this mystery.
Oh.
So they have the empty frame, and people can sit in front of the empty frame and talk about how their city is made stronger by the arts and finding the missing art.
Wow.
Isn't that mind-blowing?
That is so interesting. And so nothing, no leads?
No, it would be a great mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, pick up on that.
There you go, Sachi.
Zombies, maybe.
Yeah, zombie probably.
Zombies stole the art.
Yeah.
And there is a book about it called Master Thieves. Boston gangsters who pulled off the world's greatest art heist.
So they're suspicious of a certain group.
Apparently.
A certain group of people. They're suspicious.
Suspicious of the bad guys.
So no proof, no actual picking it up and saying, look, here it is. Oh my gosh, that is quite
I had
dramatic.
Never heard of it before.
I haven't either. And that's significant. Yeah. Rembrandt, so Degas. Oh my gosh.
So here's the kind of rally cry. Get the Archbishop of Boston, Cardinal Sean Patrick O'Malley, in front of those empty frames that still hang on the wall of the second floor of the museum, speaking about the loss to the Commonwealth, or the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Get the governor in front of those frames. Get Tom Brady, the football star. Boston needs to get to work. We're not a championship city until we get this artwork back on the wall. Yes! It's like a rally cry. I love it.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
So, but that, yeah.
Again. So are the empty frames the original ones? Like, did the artwork get cut out of them?
Must have.
I hate that when that happens. Right? You see that in a movie and you're just like, ah, yeah. Don't do it.
But I mean, it is a very dramatic moment.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But and dramatic years. Moments make for dramatic stories.
Yeah.
And
well, this is the kind of thing.
What occurs to me is you can't steal a book.
Hmm. That's true.
Right? You can steal a manuscript.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't steal a book. You can't steal a story. Once you share a story, it belongs to...
It is the world.
Right?
I saw this quote in the library at school about banning books.
Yes.
I can't remember exactly the words, but it said, I don't see why people ban books. It's banning books is futile. You can't kill an idea.
No.
Right. Yeah. And that's what it is. Stories are a collection of ideas, mm-hmm. a collection of experiences. You can't really steal that.
No, and I guess it's just about, as a now grown-up, I remember being a teenager thinking, when I'm a grown-up, I will never forget what it's like to be a teen. I'm going to be one of those cool grown-ups, right? Do you remember ever thinking
that?
I'm going to know what the top 10 is all the time. Well, I don't.
I don't.
And honestly, if my iTunes wasn't connected to the boys, I would have no idea who Skrillex was or all those songs.
I'm the same.
Right?
I'm totally the same.
And so as much as we want to be connected to that energy, I find great comfort in having Sachi here to remind us that ultimately we're all storytellers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And my story is shaped by my path and your story is shaped by your path and Sachi's story is shaped by her path. But her path just has way more... limbs on it, you know, like
and on stories I can't resist. Just I have to quote Doctor Who this one time because this one quote that I found very meaningful said, I think it was the 11th Doctor who said this, he said, we're all just stories in the end, so make it a good one.
Yeah. Aww. that's true.
Aww, it's so great.
So you should have waited 8 more minutes to say that. We could have ended with that.
So wouldn't it be great, though? I mean, moving forward, wouldn't it be? I mean, and this will happen. At some point, there'll be a collective of teenagers who are well-funded, probably by some wealthy white people from New York City who started the publishing business, and they will write and publish their own stories. I mean, that would be the ultimate.
Yeah. Well, because it keeps coming into my head that why we think adults are the only ones that are qualified to do this. And what is good writing? And you have said this before, Sachi, where stories that are written online and published online are not always good.
Yes.
But that gets weeded out, doesn't it? Like, you don't get the big views, the big reads from stories. Like, for instance, on fan fiction, or I think it was... Actually, no, it was Wattpad. I was looking at last night, and some of the top stories that are on there shows how many reads there's been.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some that have 13 million reads, 16 million reads, like millions of people are reading these online stories. So, but probably millions of people don't read the ones that aren't well written.
No.
But it doesn't mean that you have to be an experienced adult in order to write good stories. You can still have those skills and write good stories as a teen. Mm-hmm. And you don't, I mean, it doesn't have to be a masterpiece, right?
Like no, but you can still rely on adults for help with editing and help with spelling and help with grammatical, you know, there's a lot of adults who are, well, there's young people too are very passionate about punctuation and, and as odd as it sounds, but
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I know I've got, well, Sachi is, a texter who uses full punctuation and grammar.
I can't stand it when people use the shortcuts. It drives me crazy. Well, I can't deal with it.
And yeah, it speaks to your discipline as a communicator, you know?
It's so funny.
Yeah.
At least I don't have to learn what all of those things mean, right?
And I mean, it certainly isn't. I know plenty of adults who could use an editor and, and spell check and, right?
Yeah.
Spell check's a problem sometimes.
Mm-hmm. It still doesn't hurt to run a document through, just saying.
Yeah, just saying. Mm-hmm. We all do it, even though we all think, yes. I think I'm a particularly good speller and good at punctuation, and I belong to the apostrophe police, but I still make mistakes. And before I publish anything, even just the little newsletter, I have to have it go through two or three people to catch all those little things.
Okay, but yeah, newsflash, even Margaret Atwood needs an editor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Everybody needs an editor.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's hard for people who are creative sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I heard Stuart McLean even say that on the Vinyl Cafe. He said his first draft, when it goes to his editor and comes back to him in such a mess, he thinks, why do I even bother? Mm-hmm. And then the second one goes and the second edit comes back and it feels cleaner, but there's changes he has to make that he doesn't want to make, and he digs his heels in. And then the third time it goes back, and I'm thinking, wow, the guy, he's a great writer and he writes fun stories that are engaging. And I know his voice drives a lot of people crazy, but I just feel like, wow, if a writer is established as he is, has to go through 3, 4, 5 edits, then I guess, you know, when you're 16 years old and going through 2 edits, that's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. You don't have to consider it an insult.
Anything I post on fanfiction has already gone through Layla, my sister, and a couple, like a friend or two, and the beta. So it's been read 3, sometimes 4
that's
times.
That's great.
Yeah. Not always corrected to perfectness, because, I mean...
Well, there is no such thing as a perfect book. Every book has something in it.
Yeah.
I found mistakes in published books, but...
Yeah, me too.
You know, you'll see them, you'll be like, oh,
that was not...
I dare you to find a book that doesn't have a mistake in it.
Yeah,
if you really want, if you really want a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they do.
Okay, and in one final thing I wanted to know, because you were in late immersion, were you given any French novels to read?
En français, non? Quelque chose en français.
Well,
Astérix and Obélix.
I know my brain's automatically clicked to French right now.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
We've read graphic novels, but
not Asterix and Obelix.
What? Okay, you
Asterix
guys just,
and
it's okay. You can leave me out. Right? Go have a conversation.
Yeah, we've read a little bit of that. We've read some Tintin novels.
Tintin, yeah.
Not really full size novels. We've had, we've been allowed to choose novels in the past years, and this year I know we're going to read a novel as a class.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what it's called. C'est la faute à Ovechkin, I think it's called.
Oh, connais pas. C'est la faute à Ovechkin. Est-ce que c'est un texte en français ou est-ce un texte anglais traduit en français?
Je pense que c'est français, mais...
Ah, ok. Mais c'est important. Parce que souvent, les livres qu'on lit, ce sont des traductions.
Oui.
D'après moi, les élèves en français devraient lire des livres écrit en français, et non écrit en anglais et traduit en français. C'est ce qui arrive souvent.
Ça se passe beaucoup dans mon classe. Les personnes écrivent des discours, les paragraphes en anglais, et puis mis sur Google Translate, quelque chose comme ça.
Mm-hmm.
Je n'aime pas Google Translate.
Non, moi non plus, je n'aime pas Google Translate.
Ça,
c'est affreux, horrible. Yeah.
Ça ne marche pas avec les verbes.
Non, ça ne marche pas avec les verbes. C'est vrai, ça veut dire que tu comprends très bien. Parce que souvent, les gens vont dire, « Oh, si, y a rien là, je vais faire traduire avec Google. » Puis je me dis, « là, non, ça ne marchera pas. » So we were talking about how oftentimes kids in French immersion will read, some of the texts they read are English books translated into French.
Oh.
And I think it's better if they read books that were originally written in French. And then Satchi was talking about how people will write texts in English and then put them into Google Translate and then translate them into French. And it's really, for me, that's like nails on a chalkboard. Because you can tell Google's not that smart. It doesn't get the subtlety of the verbs and the meanings.
It doesn't translate everything perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it will translate directly instead of switching things. Like, for example, if you were to say, put chocolate milk into there, most of the time it says, lait du chocolat. I mean, sometimes it would just say chocolat, like, if it was in, like, a large text.
Milk of chocolate. Yeah.
Which sounds better anyway.
Oh, there you go.
It sounds fancy.
It does. Oh, well, it's fun. I'm so excited. So what would you recommend, Louise, as a good French novel for this age group?
Oh, certainly for... from my experience, we started with the graphic novels.
Yeah.
Die Strumpf, Tainte, Asterix, Obelix.
And that's
and
because...
And we still read those today, mm-hmm. Especially French immersion, because there's the visual cues.
Yeah, that
cues
seems to me
too.
To be very helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, but then as you move on, there's some lovely French canlit, there's some lovely French lit, but it starts there with the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay,
the bande de Disney, the comic strips.
Fun. That was really awesome. Thank you so much. And I think it was a fun day.
Yeah.
Talking about books. And just a reminder that the Shuswap Lake Festival, Writers Festival.
It's coming.
I think it's called Word on the Lake. Yeah, that's right. Word on the Lake Writers Festival is coming up in May. And they have children's writing contests and youth writing contests. So check their website out and see if there's something for you. And there's workshops and all kinds of mm-hmm. blue pencil cafes, opportunities to improve your writing.
Yeah.
Any other information can be found on our website, and we'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us, Sachi.
Yeah, it was fun.